Another Mock Draft Monday coming your way. ESPN's Field Yates joins us to give us his five favorite player to team fits. A desperately needed wide receiver for a team in the NFC West, a position that the Falcons have been screaming for years, and a couple of teams that, one, very predictable, one, not so much. Absolutely electric content coming your way. Let's get into it. It's Monday, April 1st. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is the man himself, Field Yates of ESPN. Field, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much, my friend. No joke being here today on April Fool's. Hopefully we'll have some great football talk, a little bit of humor along the way, but I'm honored to be on the show with you. You and I have known each other online for quite some time, but we had the great pleasure of crossing paths in Las Vegas. What was that, like maybe a month and a half or so ago? And I got to be honest with you, the handsomeness was overwhelming there at Radio Row in Las Vegas.
I'll tell you what, Field. Number one, appreciate you being here. Number two, that feels like a lot longer ago because draft season tends to stretch time out. Free agency tends to stretch time out. But yeah, you did tell me, for the people out there, the haters, Field did say that I was more handsome in person, which, you know, I told my wife immediately, Field, like, hey, Field Yates, you seen that guy? He thinks I'm more handsome in person. And she made the point, like, well, what is, does he think you look like a bum online? So
hopefully
this digital interaction here is going to go well.
No, tell your lovely wife that's not the case. It's just, you know, listen, you can go from great to greater. That's a reality of life. And that was what I found out when we met in real life. And here's what I'm hoping is that is a springboard moment to many more in-person appearances. Now that you don't live in Los Angeles anymore, I mean, the odds of us crossing paths probably went up, but more likely than not, most of our interactions will take place in big NFL events. While I think we will both be happy once the draft is over, we can enjoy a couple of months of more quiet time. Before you know it, the NFL season will be here, and hopefully there is some sort of event, that fantasy or otherwise, that allows us the opportunity to once again hang out and take over Radio Row again.
Well, 1,000%, I am looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to this show today, man, because I've been loving this Mock Draft Monday series we are doing. For the people who may not be familiar with it, this is your first episode checking it out. We did one with Nate Tice last week. It was electric. What we're doing here is, listen, and Field will be able to back this statement up, everybody that does mock drafts, it's kind of a love-hate endeavor. Like, it's a fun exercise, but you know, people aren't always loving what you're doing here with the player to team fits. You know, people have opinions. Honestly, I know it can be an exhausting exercise, but sharp evaluators like Field, they are able to pick these things out in terms of like just a guy that has a skill set that's really good for a team. So I've been asking these folks as they come on, give me five player to team fits that you absolutely love from your most recent mock draft. And that'll give us an insight on the player and an insight on the team heading into the NFL draft. But before we jump into those fits, Field, I wanted to ask you kind of like generally your methodology when you're putting together a mock draft. How much of it is your opinion? How much of it is who are you talking to? Other people, other evaluators, give us the kind of insight into Field's mock draft construction methodology.
It's a great question, and it's something that I wrestle with each mock draft that goes by. And just for reference, the mock draft picks that I will be referencing in this conversation is from my February 14th. I was going to say April 14th, which is 13 days in the future from right now. So that would be odd. I have another mock draft coming out on Wednesday that I'm continuing to tinker with. That's a two-round mock draft. But at the early portions of the process, Matt, what I think I end up doing most is just sort of throwing my own opinion out there because everybody is still forming their own opinions. We've had less data points to work with. No combine, no pro days, no senior bowl. This is very early on in the process that I am referring to. And with each part of the process that comes and goes, you feel a little bit more informed, not just in terms of how you see the players, but also how you think the league sees the players. But I would say the most maddening part of a mock draft is that you do these mock drafts sequentially. That's how I do them, at least. I suppose other people could work in a more mishmash format where they really want to get this one player to this one team that's kind of further down the draft order. But the house of cards is that it just takes one move in free agency to sort of reshuffle a team's most pressing needs. And while most of the major free agents are off the board, I mean, as recently as last week, we saw the Panthers sign Jadeveon Clowney, and all of a sudden their need for an edge goes down a little bit. So you got to be careful in terms of marrying yourself to a specific 1 through 32 mock draft until really close to whatever the deadline is that you're working on, because again, it's just one move. The next thing you know, you are talking about an entirely different draft order.
Yeah, man, that's what's so interesting about it is, like, literally everything follows within each other, right? Like, one thing happens, there's an equal one action, there's an equal and opposite reaction with the entire thing. We see that on draft night, and I've been going back and forth with a lot of people about these receivers, right? Where it seems so clean, and we're actually, your first one that we'll talk about is one of these receivers, so it'll make a nice transition, but everything seems so clean right now. Like, oh, this team's going to just pick this guy, and like, oh, he'll just drop right into this target share. We can project it all right now. But man, it doesn't always happen that way. Right. And, and if you've spent enough time watching and analyzing the NFL draft, the one thing we know is, even more so is field, honestly, than the regular games, the one true ruler of the draft is chaos.
It sure is. I think back to, and this is not the only example, and there are plenty of them, but I always think back to the time that the Raiders owned the fourth pick in the draft. They had three first round picks that year. I believe it was 2019.
Yep.
Yeah. And they took Cleveland Furrell fourth overall out of Clemson. And he was a player that was being regarded as like, maybe mid-20s that year. You know, obviously, the further away from one that you get, the less consensus on where a player belongs actually exists. So when he goes fourth overall, you're thinking to yourself, I don't think one person suggested Cleveland Furrell could go fourth overall to the Raiders, maybe with their third first-round pick. So the question is, was the draft analysis community wrong, or did the Raiders reinforce that you have to march to the beat of your own drum? Like, as much as you pay attention to some of these mock drafts and you kind of get a feel for what some of the legends like Mel Kiper Jr. are saying and what that might mean about how the league views players, if you have conviction on a guy, a lot of teams just aren't going to let players pass by the wayside. And one curveball like Cleveland Furrell can take an entire mock draft and basically burn it down from pick four on.
That's such a great example. That 2019 draft, it was one of those just throw all the papers up, like this. We are officially in chaos mode immediately from that pick on. But all right, Field, let's jump into it here.
Let's
give me
it.
Your first player to team fit from your most recent mock draft that you absolutely loved.
All right. So this, again, going back to Valentine's Day, that was about when you and I saw each other out there in Vegas. So it has been a while, as you referenced. And I thought about this, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm going on Matt's show. This is a very popular place for football fans to come and listen and get great insight and look for some nuance and look for something different. And then I thought to myself, why am I going to overthink it? It's Marvin Harrison Jr. going fourth overall to the Arizona Cardinals. Now, in this mock draft that I did not include any trades early in the process. ESPN, we tend to just sort of avoid trade just because it opens up a whole can of worms. The next thing you know, you could have 15 trades in round one. Starting in this next mock that I will be doing, again, coming out on Wednesday, there will be trades included. But a Marvin Harrison Jr. going fourth to the Cardinals may sound like low-hanging fruit, and yet if you look at their wide receiver depth chart right now, it screams, we need a wide receiver. You know, they have a couple of intriguing young pieces. I know you're a fan of Michael Wilson and, you know, Greg Dortch, who's been sort of a fantasy, you know, every once in a while, he just kind of goes off when you need him most.
Yards per route run king. Targets
right,
per run, yards
right.
per route yeah. run king, Greg Dortch, yeah.
That's right, and Wake Forest alum as well. So, but they need a difference maker that we believe could be the best wide receiver on a very, very good offense, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is exactly that. And maybe Arizona winds up trading down because of the fact that they've got so many needs. Mm-hmm. They could say, we'll pick up 2, 3, 4 picks, whether it's all in this year or maybe they're some in future years as well, and just use this to kind of continue to push the ball down the field in terms of building this roster out, but also preserving some flexibility in the future. But if I'm Arizona, I'm thinking long and hard about just sticking right at pick four and taking Marvin Harrison Jr. Because what I'm afraid of is that if I drop from pick four to, say, pick 11 I don't have an immediate path back into the top 10, I don't like my odds of drafting any of Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze. And while it is a very deep class of wide receivers, as you know, I see a pretty clear divide from the third wideout, whoever you think that is of those three, to the fourth, fifth, sixth, etc.
Yeah, I'm with you that I like Brian Thomas Jr., but there's a clear tier drop off to me between these three guys and everybody else. And like, if you look at historically, I think it's, again, it's just one tier to me. I think Brian Thomas Jr. is a really good player, but there's just a big gap with the rest of these guys. And it's funny, Field, because we know this about the Cardinals too. There's a decent chance that even if they don't pick him at four, right? Like, say they get a big offer from one of these teams that wants to come up for JJ McCarthy and we get quarterback 1, 2, 3, 4. We saw last year that the Cardinals traded down and then traded right back up, right? So, there's a chance that they could find themselves to one of these receivers, even if it's not here at pick four. And I'm with you, man, that you look at this receiver room right now, and if they drop a true transformative prospect, which I think Harrison is, and I think these other two guys are tier one prospects over the last four draft classes, this room looks pretty good, right?
Like, it does.
Harrison, I think Michael Wilson can be a two. Greg Dortch is intriguing, and really they have Trey McBride, who will probably be their number two pass catcher anyways.
Yeah.
But without one of those guys, even in a deep receiver draft, it's not looking so great if you drop like I like these players, but like Ricky Pearsall or like Ladd McConkey or something like that. It does suddenly doesn't look as intimidating as it could with Harrison there.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, in fantasy football, it feels like oftentimes the winner of a trade is the person who got the best player in the trade, right? So even if it's a 3-for-1 with three good players going for one great player, you know, that usually that great player, the acquiring team, feels like the winner. In the draft, it's oftentimes the person that diversifies their portfolio the most. And while I'm never saying that it's a bad thing to have extra picks, if you're Arizona, you might stand pat at four because you're saying to yourself, we have 27. We own 35 as well. I believe it's 35, 36. In the second round, I'm telling you, Matt, I need to get better about refining like the exact pick these teams have at the top of the second round. It kind of trips you up because it doesn't, you know, the Commanders have two, the Patriots have three, then they reverse in the even round. So because they had the same record. So I got to make sure I'm staying sharp on those numbers at the top of the second round. But yes, the Cardinals do have an opportunity to make a whole bunch of pieces come together. But I'm okay with every once in a while I'm saying to myself, like, if you get a guy that we've been talking about in the same breadth or close to it, it's like AJ Green or Julio Jones in terms of prospect coming into the draft, into the NFL, that to me feels like a pretty reasonable return on investment if he pans out as the number four overall pick.
Yeah, they're one of the teams that already has, they're one of six teams that already has 10 plus picks in the draft. So they have a good bit of draft capital as it is. Last thing on Harrison here, no shock. I want to stick a little extra time on the receiver pick here, but
listen,
I think I saw Mel tweet this out. You guys just recently did a first draft episode on who is the top receiver in this draft class. To you, is it clearly Marvin Harrison at the top, or do you think there's an argument for Nabers or even Rome Odunze, who I think is the guy that gets left out of the discussion far too often?
Yeah, I actually just arrived back from a Washington Pro Day recently, and I saw Rome out there, and which is an awesome dude. I thought he'd be an amazing player. Here's what I would say, is that I think it's a conversation, and that's going to sound blasphemous, and people are going to get very mad. They're going to yell at me or anybody else that shares that opinion, and what I want to remind them is that, you know, our job on the media is to evaluate these players for all 32 teams, right? So we're assigning a value of Marvin Harrison Jr. vis-a-vis Malik Nabers, vis-a-vis Rome Odunze for all 32. When the reality is that there are certain teams that play offense in a certain way that are going to prioritize the stuff that Nabers does at an elite level, which specifically is run after the catch. I mean, he's as explosive as a player as there is in the entire draft, regardless of the position. And there are others who are going to say, we want the guy who is this big, physical, smooth, outstanding body control wide receiver like Marvin Harrison Jr. is, even if Nabers is a bit superior after the catch. Like, I think Harrison is probably superior prior to the catch. But when we're talking about these two, if you're saying one is better than the other, I think of it really as like, okay, one guy's got a 98 grade, one guy's got a 97.5. I don't think that saying that Marvin Harrison Jr. is better than Malik Nabers should be considered some sort of, you know, sort of a disparaging remark towards Nabers. I have them as the third and fourth best players overall, my entire board, with Roma Dunze at six. So I don't know how many drafts I'll cover with three receivers in the top six, but that tells you how special these three are. And they all get the job done in a very different way.
Yeah, I'm with you that the only thing I would push back on is anyone that says like it's not a conversation, because that it's not a tier of three, because to me, these guys are all so close. And like, if you like this guy better than this guy, fine with me. I'm cool with that. Totally. Like, I think it's worth a discussion. But for Arizona specifically, why I like this pick so much is because you saw them throw Marquise Brown out in kind of a traditional X receiver role last year. And that's really not how I'd like him to be used. I can see it with Marvin Harrison in their offense. But all right, Field, totally. Give me your second prospect team fit that you really love.
Okay, so second one here is Dallas Turner going to the Falcons, pick 8 overall. And let's just cut to the chase here. Their pass rush last year left a lot to be desired. Their former defensive coordinator, Ryan Nielsen, did a pretty good job of manufacturing pressure with just sort of design blitzes and kind of organized chaos. But they didn't have a single player with more than 6.5 sacks. And you and I both know and follow enough people to champion the idea that sacks are not the only stat that matters as it pertains to pressure. But the bottom line is pressure was not nearly frequent enough from the Falcons last year defensively. And I think a lot of that was a personnel issue. You got a new head coach in Raheem Morris, who's a defensive guy. And I'm not saying that you have to do exactly what your coach wants all the time, because the GM does have the final say in this organization. But it doesn't hurt when you can make your head coach happy and draft a player in Dallas Turner who is the best athlete amongst all the edges in this year's class. I'll be honest with you, the best tape I watched of any edge this past year was clearly Leau Tuilagi from UCLA. There's some medical questions surrounding him, as he was actually forced to medically retire during his time at Washington. He resurfaced at UCLA, got clearance. So that's a reason why I think he could slide a touch in the first round. But Turner had an amazing combine on top of being the SEC Defensive Player of the Year this past season. Not quite in the tier of his teammate at Alabama, Will Anderson, but very, very good prospect that gives Atlanta something that is so desperately needed, because after all that money they spent on offense in free agency, it's time for them to hack away on that defensive side of the ball.
I gather this is probably your first defensive pick in the mock, right?
Like, it was, yes. Yeah. It was my first, and I will, without revealing the entirety of mock 2.0, it is again the first defensive pick in mock 2.0, and also one of very few in the first half of the first round. This is, everybody who's listening to this probably already knows, but we're talking about quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle central in the 2024 NFL draft.
Yeah, 100%, which means it's going to be exciting draft night for the Dynasty Bros. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Is it funny that you bring this up, though, that, oh, yeah, last year, man, they really didn't have a great edge presence. Field, I don't know when you collected your first check doing NFL media work. I definitely think, though, the entire time I've covered the league, the last 10 years, we've been saying that about the Falcons for like 10 years now, that they need an edge rusher.
I know. It's amazing. Like, who was the last? Probably like John Abraham.
John Abraham, yeah.
There. Yeah. So it's been a while. They're desperate for it. But after going back-to-back-to-back skilled player on offense, going from Kyle Pitts to Drake London to Bijan, it's time. Like, just hammer away on the defense. And I don't think the Falcons have done a very good job hiding their cards this offseason. They made it very clear they were going to pursue a quarterback. And I suspect that over the next 3.5 weeks prior to the draft, we'll hear a lot about the Falcons' need to beef up that pass rush.
I think Raheem Morris is going to be a very happy man to get a difference maker there in the top 10 first year in his regime. All right, we're staying on defense here with your third prospect to team fit.
Yeah, let's keep things rolling here. It's Nate Wiggins. This is further down the board. The Eagles pick number 22. Nate Wiggins goes there from Clemson. And if you're not familiar with his game, what you need to know is that Nate Wiggins can freaking fly. Had the fastest 40 of any defensive player at the combine. Obviously, Xavier Worthy ran the fastest 40 overall. It's 4.29 for Nate Wiggins. At the combine, he weighed 173 pounds, which is very light. He bulked up to over 180 pounds. I think it was 185. It is maybe 183 at his pro day. So the trick of the combine is like you simultaneously want these guys to do really well in some of the on-field drills, but it will change their preparation for the combine specifically. So it might be that Nate Wiggins said, let me get down as light as possible to run the fastest 40, then let me bulk back up. But his speed really shows up on tape. And Philly's lack of speed really showed up down the stretch last season. They've got two awesome veteran corners and James Bradbury and also Darius Slay, been very good for a long time, but speed is just such a deficiency for this team. They need to basically spend every asset they have available in the draft on defense. They have some holes to fill on offense as well. They got to be thinking long-term about some of the offensive line pieces, specifically Lane Johnson. He'll be 34 later on this offseason. But if I'm Philly, the opportunity to draft a speedy corner is too good to ignore. And I'm sure, again, coach influence here. I think Vic Fangio would be very happy about some defensive reinforcements at the top of the draft.
I imagine when you're doing a mock draft that the Eagles are one of these teams that you feel pretty confident that maybe you don't know the exact player, but you get a general sense of the position, right? Because Howie Roseman has showed us over the long tenure that he's had there as a GM, like he has only taken premium positions, which obviously cornerback fits into the group here.
Yeah, I will say this, though. After they signed Saquon Barkley, I've now prepared myself for something weird from Philly. Right. If you told me that the Eagles, and this, you know, maybe 2 months ago, like well before free agency, would be a top suitor or eventually the top suitor for Saquon Barkley, I would have thought, nah, like just no way. They don't do that. And now they do that. So I'm starting to wonder whether Philly will keep us on our toes during the draft. But this would not be a situation where they're keeping us on our toes. This would be predictable. And we like predictability in the draft.
Could you imagine, like, you would know this better than me. I'm not grinding linebacker tape. I got enough receivers to worry with in this draft class, but I don't think there's a linebacker that's necessarily like a consensus first round pick. But could you imagine in one off season, Howie Roseman spends like near top of market money at running back and then drafts a linebacker in the first round? It's like, I mean, cats and dogs living together, field, oil and water. What are we doing here?
We'd have to talk to Jeffrey Lurie, their owner, and see whether Howie Roseman was still in charge. There probably isn't a guy at 22 amongst the linebackers that I would feel really comfortable taking. Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M might end up being the highest drafted linebacker. Peyton Wilson from NC State I thought was the best linebacker on film from this past season, but he's got a major shoulder and knee injury on the ledger. And as you know, NFL teams all have their own evaluation of where guys are at health-wise, but generally speaking, they're going to defer to the guy who's got that cleaner medical history if there is any concern whatsoever on a guy like Wilson being, you know, more of a risk if something happens once again.
All right, we're going from your third pick here with one of the most predictable teams to your fourth pick here, a team that's been pretty unpredictable in the draft, but general manager Brad Holmes has let us know that actually I know what I'm doing in the draft, and he's been right, and he's let us know he's right, and good for him too.
Yeah, seriously. Hey, talk your talk if you're Brad Holmes, right? So I'm with Darius Robinson, an edge from Missouri. This guy was a defensive tackle early in his career at Missouri. He slimmed down to like 285 pounds. He's super versatile, though. I mean, you'd imagine a guy who goes from defensive tackle to defensive end's got some versatility to him, and he showed that during his final season at Missouri. He showed it again down soon at the Senior Bowl when he was lining up all over the defensive front in one-on-one drills, and it pretty much didn't make a difference. No one could really block this guy. And if I think I know the Lions well, one thing I do believe is that they're going to draft a player in the first round that's got some nastiness to him, has an edge to him. No pun intended here in drafting an edge with an edge. But Darius Robinson, and I mean this in a manner of respect and positivity, is just kind of a, you know, he's a just a monstrous, just like wants to eat you up defensive end. Tough, physical, unafraid to engage bigger players than him. Maybe that's the defensive tackle in him who was used to lining up against 320-pound guards every single snap. But he plays with some serious force. May not be the most explosive edge rusher in the class. But the Lions, despite signing Marcus Davenport, really need to keep that that pass rush depth going. You know, this past year, obviously, Aiden Hutchinson took another step forward, which is a scary thought for the league. But I don't know that I would want to trust Marcus Davenport is my every down second rusher, given the fact that, unfortunately, one of the stories of his career is pretty good when he plays, but often not available on the field.
Yeah, this seems like just such a clear need for Detroit, right? Where, like you said, Aiden Hutchinson took that leap last year. Was just, I mean, that guy's so fun to watch. I mean, like, he's pterodactyl out there, man. It just, he's like hawking over offensive linemen. It's pretty incredible. But they, even in free agency, not only they add Marcus Davenport, they also add DJ Reader, kind of double downing on that, like, hey, we stopped the run here in Detroit. Like, you are not going to run on us. But that second edge rusher or even just a guy that they can rotate in there still feels like a clear-cut need for this defense to get where I think they want to go. Obviously, they showed last year they were, you know, a Brandon Ayuk fingertip away from a Super Bowl. They can get there with this group, but I think taking that next step involves being better on defense.
Totally. And cornerback not to be ignored here as well. Sure. As a matter of fact, it'll come down to corner or edge for me in my second mock draft. And that cornerback situation was only, you know, the need for corners only picked up after the really scary and unfortunate situation involving Cam Sutton, who has now been released amidst legal troubles. So if there are Lions fans out there that are listening to this right now screaming, but what about cornerback? I can promise you cornerback will be heavily considered in round one as well.
And hey, that's why you need to click on Field Yates's 2-round mock draft.
Because
there we go. All right. Your final pick here, Field, your final 5 player to team fit that you absolutely love.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder whether this guy has any chance of being available this late in the draft, but it's Amarius Mims going 31st overall to the 49ers. If you don't know, the Cliff Notes version of Amarius Mims is this. We are talking about a freakishly large human who I'm not sure how he moves as well as he does. We're talking 6'6", 320 some pounds, light on his feet, can really bend, was a right tackle for Georgia. But as you know, obviously Georgia's had a lot of good offensive linemen in recent seasons. Last year they had Broderick Jones, who was a first round pick. I mean, these things happen at those top schools, right? Where guys don't slide through the cracks. They just have to wait their turn because they're a 5-star replacing another 5-star. But Amarius Mims, between the depth at Georgia and also some injuries which he has battled, was limited to a total of 803 snaps his entire career. So some perspective on that, Matt, is that's fewer snaps than Joe Alt played all of last season. So we're talking about basically 1 year worth of playing time for Amarius Mims and 3 college seasons. And big fan of the game, and I think he's got a ton of upside. But the reason why I didn't have his name called earlier is just because there are some question marks in terms of the inexperience and not being as available. If you're the 49ers, you re-sign Colton McKivitz to a 1-year extension through 2024, you might be able to say to yourself, this is not quite a redshirt type player, but a guy that if he's not ready to go next year, that's okay by us because they're one of the few teams that can afford to draft a player and not rely heavily on him because this is one of the best rosters in the entire NFL.
Well, this is why I really wanted to do the show to see like where we get smart people agreeing. And Nate Tice actually had this one on last week's show too, where he actually had the Niners trading up for Amarius Mims. So that's pretty cool to see.
That might be what it takes.
Yeah, I mean, because it might have to come to that, but I agree. He's a guy that really makes a lot of sense as someone that they need. They need to get bigger, more fundamentally sound, too. And the thing that sold it to me was Nate kind of explaining that he could see Mims being not just a guy that maybe they do get on the field later in his rookie season, but even the long-term replacement for Trent Williams if develops into a guy that's like, I mean, because Field, like, There are all kinds of weapons on the 49ers. The one guy they really weaponize in a unique way is Trent Williams at left tackle. Yeah. I feel like they need that succession plan there in place.
Yeah, and Mims could play either side, like Nate said. He's played right tackle in part because Georgia's had better options, has had available options at left tackle. But there's not much about his skill set that makes me think he wouldn't be able to get there. It just would have to be after Trent Williams retires, which it feels like right now every year is a decision for Trent. Do I come back? Do I hang him up and wait 5 years to be inducted into the Hall of Fame? But that is certainly the kind of player that we are talking about in Trent Williams out in San Francisco.
All right, man. Final thing here. We've been positive enough. The way we like to end this is, what is one pick from your mock draft? And remember, Field's caveat here that this was one from back in February. But what was one pick you made in your most recent mock draft? You're just like, I don't love this, but you know what? The editor's on my back. He needs this thing submitted. I gotta make this pick here.
Well, what I would tell people is that it's worthwhile to read the mock drafts, not just the picks, the explainers. And so my first mock, I had the Steelers.
Now you're asking
I know. I'm asking way too much from our loyal readers, listeners, and watchers. But I had the Steelers at pick 20 taking Bo Nix from Oregon, who I actually like as a prospect. He's a pretty good player. And the subtext of it was, this pick is as much representative of the idea that if I'm Pittsburgh, I'm adding competition to the quarterback room this offseason. I'm not just giving the job to Kenny Pickett, which was the early rhetoric out of Pittsburgh, right? Like, yeah, he's the guy. Competition, because I do think that Justin Fields offers just as much, if not more, than Russell Wilson for this offense in 2024. So Bo Nix going to Pittsburgh was definitely kind of jamming a quarterback peg into let's get some competition hole. But I actually think Bo might go higher than this now, Matt, because the dust has settled for the most part in the quarterback carousel. And, you know, there are a few teams that definitely still need a quarterback upgrade, most notably Denver, who picks at 12. And if you're Denver and you have no second round pick and your current quarterback depth chart is Jared Stidham and Ben DiNucci, that to me screams this team is going to be picking a quarterback somewhere in the draft. And if it's not 12th overall, and I'm not so sure they're going to land anybody who has a real shot to start for them this upcoming season, because you don't typically find starting quarterbacks, you know, 75th, 80th, 110th in the draft, which is where Denver will be picking after their first round pick at 12.
I'm so glad that you brought the Denver thing up, because that was exactly kind of what I was going to ask you here. Because obviously, like you said, Bo Nix to Pittsburgh, that's not going to happen. You were right. They're definitely not just going to let Kenny Pickett walk into the job. In fact, Kenny Pickett's off the roster. But I just filed my quarterback team need piece, and like, Denver is one of the ones that has a critical, screaming need at the position because of what you said. Like, they either overdraft somebody at 12. Or trade up, and I mean, I don't even know what assets they're giving up at that point, but they are sacrificing a significant part of their future, a team that's already done that for multiple players and a coach here. They've traded up they traded for Russell Wilson, they traded up for Marvin Mims last year, they traded assets for Sean Payton, so there's, you know, a lot of that already going on here. But I mean, if you don't do that, or you don't overdraft somebody at 12, you're looking at is this just a kick the can down the road year? So it feels like Bo Nix is a guy that could be somebody that hears his name called in round one, and fans are going to freak out about it. Or like, we drafted Bo Nix, but for the people, can come back to this pod after whatever team drafts Bo Nix in round one, if that happens. What does he bring to the table that makes him a guy that, like, okay, it's aggressive, but here's why it might not be that bad.
You know, I had a chance to go cover Bo's pro day a couple weeks ago, whenever free agency was. And I asked him, what would you sell NFL teams on if you were speaking to them right now? And he talked about how, you know, the number one trait was processing. And he definitely processes it at a very, very high level. And that's one of the ways in which you set the single season record at the FBS level in completion percentage, which he did last year at 77.45%. Now, the types of throws he was making was not the same. They were not the same as those that his quarterback brethren were taking and making. If you look at the top six prospects amongst quarterbacks, five of them had an air yards per attempt of at least 9, with a couple of them at over 10. Bo Nix was right around 6.25. So is it more dink and dunk than Michael Penix and Jaden Daniels driving it down the field? It is. But, you know, 77.45%, that's like a pretty good percentage when you're playing flag football. So that certainly speaks to the processing and overall accuracy that Bo brings to the table.
Well, we've seen Sean Payton make it work with a quarterback who, once his arm was diminished in Drew Brees, he was doing a lot of that. Let's get it out quickly. Let's process. So that makes a lot of sense. All right, Field, really appreciate your time. Really appreciate you jumping on the show. Tell the people all about what you're working on as you're heading into the NFL draft here, especially First Draft, the show with Mel Kiper and everything you guys are doing there.
Yeah, First Draft Mondays and Thursdays, wherever you get your podcasts, also available on YouTube. The Monday show airs on ESPN2 at 2 as well, Eastern time, that is. So hopefully you can find First Draft somewhere. I've got the 2-round mock coming around the corner. I've got a piece on the draft ranges for the various quarterbacks. How high, how low could they go? You got really narrow ranges for guys like Caleb Williams. You got big, fat, wide ranges for guys like Bo Nix, who we talked about maybe being the 12th overall pick, but he also might be a second round pick. You just don't know with 3+ weeks until the draft. So lots of draft content coming around the corner, and I really can't wait for Detroit. I am so happy that it's finally the month of the NFL draft.
Hell yeah, man. Well, Field puts in the work, so you got to make sure you check out that quarterback piece, because that is where you're going to get some good plugged in information. Field, I look forward to the next time in real life. Us two handsome fellows see each other in person again.
My handsome friend, I'll talk to you and hopefully see you soon.
All right, that is going to do it for our second mock draft Monday. Tomorrow, We continue our teams that will shape the draft series by looking at the teams in the top 10 that are not looking for a quarterback. That's the Arizona Cardinals, the LA Chargers, and now the Atlanta Falcons with Kirk Cousins. The Athletic's Robert Mays joins me for that show. Until then, we're out.